my least favorite things in the world is feeling sluggish.
Yeah.
I know you empathize with that.
Yeah. Yeah, the start to my day, it was just like, damn, good morning. Because of hard living. But I shouldn't feel guilty about that.
No.
You know? But it's just like, man, like, I don't know. I'm looking forward to having like a low-key birthday next year.
Mm-hmm.
One that I'm just chilling. I'm just chilling.
So this
like
was...
Like just weed.
As
and maybe a little bit of a mushroom chocolate. That's it. No drink. Nothing.
It's funny how you're already creating the slippery slope for yourself heading into next year. Like, even a year from now, you're like, low-key, maybe mushroom chocolate, maybe a hit of acid. I'm like, Joyn, you're already going to have a blowout.
Does California give you a discount for guns if it's your birthday, I wonder? That'd be fun with acid. It's like, dude.
This is going to be a way crazier than you had this year, which was a lot of fun. I had a front row seat for at least part of it.
I was happy to have you. That was really fun.
Yeah, how would you rate this as far as birthdays? I had a blast, by the way.
Y'all. Pretty high. Yeah. I mean, like, definitely one of the better ones since COVID. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, yeah. So, how do you feel? We measure a lot of the world in like kind of a pre and post COVID life.
Mm-hmm.
I know people have felt the wave of the malaise of like a post COVID world at different times. How do we feel now? A couple months into 2024, as Julian Goza.
Specifically in 2024?
Yeah, like this moment in time, high point in a post-COVID world.
Well, the high point has changed completely. Like, from how high a high point could be, if ever a high point could.
Go. It sounds like a Dr. Seuss rhyme of some kind.
But like, before COVID, the highs were so goddamn high. And so I think now the highs are just a different kind of high.
Wow.
And that's as articulate as I could be about that.
It's articulate. I know you don't necessarily look at it that way, and I don't, but that sounds really sad.
I know. It is. Hmm. You know, we asked one of my professors, the psychoanalysis one, who's a real baller. I don't even
baller psych
professor. But essentially the question was, well, how do we fix this shit, you know? How do you fix these things that are so like inherently developmentally fundamentally broken within your psyche and within your spirit? And she was like, you grieve. That's the only way.
Wow.
That's how you fix it, guys. And it's so fucking true. Like, there's just no other way. And having hope and faith that tomorrow will be a different day.
But that hit me like a ton of bricks.
Did it?
Oh, yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. I'm here to hit you like a ton of bricks.
Because you're Julian Goza.
And you are Brian Bogart.
This is the Guantanamo Bay's podcast. A Cuban cousin, Kiki. Yeah, like a ton of bricks. on a day where I booked my first therapy appointment in a year or two.
Mazel to ya.
Yeah.
Mazel to ya.
Even if there are some high points in some ways in terms of growth I'm experiencing, there's some definite low points in terms of a loss and hardships in other ways.
Of course.
So it's made for a real cocktail of a year so far. It's still very early, but this is a very unique flavor I'm experiencing.
Listen, better to get all the rough shit out of the way, I guess, at the start, right?
Yeah, if we're looking at it, the year-long cycles. But
yeah, also I noticed you didn't, and I'm not drinking after my blowout of a B-day, but yeah. I noticed you didn't pour yourself whiskey like you said.
No, I asked you, do you want me to pour you whiskey? Because sometimes we'll have a little libation while we sip and talk.
But at least in my damn January, if I declined it, you'd still drink it?
Yeah, but I think also and like I said, I had a front row seat for your party too, so you're like, I'm off the sauce. And I'm like, you know what? I was there for it too. I'm not rushing to.
Got it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm doing an open mic tonight. I don't want to be sloshed by the time I show up.
Right.
Yeah.
That's for the best.
Yeah.
That's probably why I don't go to those.
Why?
Because everyone gets sloshed.
Because everyone gets
sloshed. No, I'm sorry. I get sloshed.
Someone's getting sloshed. Sometimes it's me. Sometimes it's everyone there. Sometimes
but rarely is it everyone there, because that's not the cultural moment anymore.
No, it's very much a say you're sober when you're still doing weed and cocaine, kind of?
Not even that. I feel like it's like SSRIs and like...
SSRIs?
And like maybe a beer. Like mood stabilizers.
Well, I feel like cocaine has fallen out of fashion the more fentanyl has become common.
Yeah, that too.
So it's just... But I think weed is evergreen, no pun intended. And like people say I'm sober all the time and then just like spark up all the time, you know, Cali sober, as they call it.
Cali sober.
Which is a really fun.
That is my goal for next year's birthday. It's just Cali sober, baby.
A Cali sober birthday.
Yeah. Cause I think, at a wellness retreat. A Cali, I don't know. It sounds like a Bing Crosby, a Cali sober birthday.
Oh, you know what? There's the episode title already. So early on.
Great. Oh, fuck. Pour me the whiskey. We already... I'm so on. Just kidding.
You literally just dropped your phone while you said I'm so...
No. My body's like spazzing.
I know. That's how on you
it's
are.
It's withdrawing. That's how on I am.
My body's rejecting how on I am. It's so much.
So let's get it. Let's dish, Brian. Okay. Let's get into this whammy of a bammy.
It's a whammy of a bammy of an episode.
Because we're two Cubanis.
We are two Cubanis. Our mothers are from Cuba. We like to report on news from the motherland, our mother's land of Cuba.
Brian, shut the fuck up. We have to stop over-explaining that. I love you.
I like, you know what, for the new people here.
Sure.
I always want to leave a little treat for them.
That's true. Welcome, new students.
Yeah. For the return people, we apologize for this brief pause. But do we want to cover recent news from Cuba or older news from Cuba first?
Let's do recent.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. And then the story from the past always talks about the future. So.
Totally.
We'll bring that part up
later. First we'll give,
We're going to nail this circular moment we're about to have.
Yeah.
So
love it.
Here's the news from Cuba. News from the motherland. Which is that Cuba and South Korea have officially established diplomatic relations. What do you think this means? Just when you
I was like, oh shit, that's right. That is the news of like that is the contemporary
you nodded
news
like,
item.
You nodded like a news pundit. Well, like yeah.
And then, you told me this and I was like, bro, I don't know what that means.
I just want to hear what you like think it means at face value.
I remember you telling me a few things I know about South Korea.
One, that one's the not North one, right?
I wanted Parasite to win.
And it did. Yeah.
That I know about
so
South
Cuba
Korea.
Is aligning itself with an Oscar winner. We got to keep that in mind.
Yes. Yeah. And what else? Oh, you told me they were Christian.
South Korea is very Christian. Yeah.
Yes. You told me they were Christian.
And like, I thought that was weird, but like,
it's like two progressive girls at a California school shit talking. And I remember you describing them as Western at one point, which kind of threw me for a loop because I was like, Brian, they're in Asia. But like, I guess commercially speaking, in a fiscal context. Mm-hmm. Hey guys, we're in a fiscal context. That's a
Can
great
we have a word from the audience.
That's a great improv team name.
Yeah, it is.
But yeah, fiscally, I guess they're more Western.
Economically, politically leans more.
And I mean, religiously sounds
we'll
like.
Put it this way, right? They border North Korea, who's like a hostile neighbor. They have the demilitarized zone between them.
I knew that one.
So when you're assessing North and South Korea, which have very different relationships, North Korea is very aligned with China and a lot of, you know, communists like Iran and Russia. And South Korea is more aligned.
Oh my God, they're cat dog.
They are cat dog. Yes, Julian.
Whoa. Oh my God. Just, I finally understand the geopolitical relationship between North and South Korea, and it's fucking cat dog.
You are not wrong. There was at least a little thread of love between cat dog. You know, they could at least exist peacefully, kind of.
Yeah.
They didn't try to kill each other as much as cat dog. But yeah. I don't know. They were pretty. Cat really was mean to dog.
Cat, I think, would be the North Korea.
Cat is the North Korea.
I'll say it.
Cats, for the most part, I don't know. It depends on how you look at it. But I'd probably agree with you there.
Yeah.
But.
So then what does this mean for Cuba that the dog of cat dog is now what? But like in
what you would call this in a, if you're kind of scoring the geopolitical scorecard, it's like a win for the West. Because what I was going to say was out of the two Koreas, South is obviously the one that's like more Western aligned.
Yeah, of course.
Right.
But more than anything, it's a win for Cuba. Because all this means, I think, is that they're now incorporated more into the global market.
Yeah, no, it's a big win for Cuba. And when you're talking about who are they seeking partnerships from, and it is now more countries that are Western-leaning than communist.
Just like us. I'm Western-leaning.
Right. I mean,
But like, I think I'm a Buddhist.
Exactly. But you can be Western and Buddhist. You know, Buddhism.
Yeah, Richard Gere, my fellow Pisces.
Exactly. That's why Buddhism.
And his giant houses.
Yeah.
And all of the materialism he never renounced.
I mean, what is a Buddhist, beautiful Buddhist symbol besides a giant house, right? So I guess if you are looking for a long-term path for Cuba and the U.S. to normalize relations, it's going to happen
through the side door.
Exactly. And South Korea is one of those side doors.
Mm. Mm-hmm. So I don't fully understand, though, what it would mean for them to be in relation to each other on the business front.
What does that mean?
What does that look like? Like, so their banks could, like,
sure.
Can, like, I don't get it.
You're not
I
wrong.
Can't even find the words to ask the question.
Like, so their banks could, like, be friends or whatever. But that's pretty much it. Like, that is what it is. Yes.
Banks. Mingling with each other.
Oh, and banks is people, right? And now governments. And now, you know, now you have likely embassies in each other's countries coming. So a physical presence.
Oh, okay.
But you know, more of like a physical.
I
know,
see. It's like yeah. A. It's like a. It's diplomacy.
Yes.
Okay.
When I said diplomatic relations earlier, I mean diplomacy.
I see. So like their State Departments essentially are we're just flirting. Gonna pitch a tent in each other's camp.
They're playing footsie. Yeah, a little bit more than footsie. They're now they're now leaving their toothbrush.
Now I'm just picturing a South Korean Cuban baby.
Gorgeous.
And he looked like me, but little.
I don't think your features are particularly Korean.
I have deep set eyes.
Julie.
I do.
I'm not disputing that you have deep set eyes. That's not
is that uncouth it. To say? I if, don't think it
if you're
is.
You're going straight for a physical. You're like, what is the physical feature that this race has?
Oh, black hair, I also have.
Yeah, I know. I know Buster Brown. I said features.
Buster Brown?
Yeah.
Who's that?
I don't know. I just hear that thrown around a lot.
Okay. So how does Cuba even set up an embassy in South Korea?
Usually with like...
money?
Yeah.
Like state money?
Mm-hmm.
Aren't they... is that a worthwhile investment for a country that, granted, is a little cash strapped?
Usually whenever countries...
I saw her at the mall. She asked me for a cigarette, girl. She came up behind me at Dillard's and asked me for a cigarette.
The establishing diplomatic relations doesn't require like a down payment from Cuba necessarily. You know, this opens up the door for that kind of stuff down the road. But
so they don't... So they're not going to put in like a brick and mortar?
Look, you know, like, TBD on like what the schematics are for any buildings. Right now, it's just their departments have said we've opened up relations. And like it doesn't require like a down payment on any country to start diplomatic relations.
No, I understand that. Yeah. But I'm such an architecture ho that I'm like, what are these embassies going to look like?
Like state buildings in every...
No, but I feel like embassies have the flair of the country they represent. 100p.
Yeah, a lot.
100p.
So let's just imagine it looks kind of Cuban then.
And it's in South Korea.
So you're just like kind of getting off on a blend of Cuban and Korean architecture.
I believe so. Yeah. LA has like a streak of that kind of confluence of flavors.
No, I don't disagree. It's just so funny to me that like as I'm trying to like go further down the rabbit hole, you're just like, hold on, Brian. No, I need to know what this pagoda is going to look like.
Well, so then like what else do you have to say about this? Because all of my questions... are answered, and I don't really... Of course we're pro this, you know? Yeah, like, if we had to, like... I don't know.
Yeah.
What's it all about, Basil?
I think it's just an indication that Cuba's done being as secluded as it is and is also not afraid to, like... you know, skirt some of its old communist relations to find new allies, even if they're capitalist pigs.
And we stand growth.
And we stand growth. And we stand prosperity for Cuba.
Like, how involved in that general region of the Caribbean is South Korea? There we go. That's how I'm going to thread
all
this.
Fair question, and I don't know exactly how much. I don't know what their other Latin American economic partnerships are. But I do think that they, like a lot of Asia, tries to invest in the global South. Which is a lot of South American Africa. What are you looking up?
I typed in South Korean Caribbean embassies. And much to your surprise, I'm not on Google Images. I'm actually looking for articles. Oh, here we go.
That's nice of you to...
I'm looking at diplomatic lists of diplomatic missions of South Korea. Mm-hmm. And I don't...
What does the Latin American section say?
Let's see. Argentina, Bolivia, Brazil, yeah. Canada, Chile, Colombia,
a lot of the global
Costa
South.
Rica, Dominican Republic. Boom. Ecuador. Okay, they've got their fingers in all sorts of pots.
Yeah.
Who, that's so colonial. That's another thing that makes them Western, huh?
So, well, I think everyone likes diplomatic relations.
Yeah, yeah.
You just don't want...
I'm not anti that, but right. Like, you know, it comes with... Talk about a side door, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it's a side door to a lot of espionage, a lot of subversion and potential sabotage and etc. Yeah.
And bro, speaking of embassies,
it's a genie.
Those fucking sound waves.
Sound waves?
That like gave people like...
Headaches?
Yes.
Do you see that they're reopening the case on Havana Syndrome?
That's what I'm talking about, Havana Syndrome.
Yeah.
That happened at the U.S. Embassy, right?
Various U.S. embassies, they claim. And then they said...
Who do you think? 1, 2, 3.
China.
Russia.
Together. But together, you know, it's... They
¿Por qué no los dos?
Yeah, they work together on a lot of intelligence stuff.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's...
Can't wait for Instagram to once again bury this episode.
No, yeah, they work together largely against the U.S. Mm. You know, it's what they do.
But damn, that's dirty. That sound waves and shit.
That's really creepy because it's creepy. About... brain, you know,
and how your teeth just fall out and shit.
Mm-hmm.
So scary.
And so whenever I don't know if it was the State Department or Justice Department, but someone had closed the case on Havana Syndrome, saying like this was all like a placebo or like, you know,
right.
And then we've opened it because a lot of the people have disputed that, a lot of people who went through it. And so you talk about side doors, Russian CCP interests. Who's to say that they didn't have influence? Like, they probably threw massive resources at that case when it was undergoing the arbitration or you know, to make sure that they just wrote it off as like, it's a, you know, it's a big nothing.
Totally. I don't know. I completely lost the thread for a second because I was thinking about how we also want to talk about something else Cuba related.
We do.
But one more question about this.
Yeah.
Isn't the U.S. pissed at their homegirl South Korea for doing this?
No. The U.S. probably sees this as an opportunity for them to get their foot in the door with Cuba now.
Okay.
China's thinking about building a military base in Cuba. So
money makes the world go around the
yeah,
world.
Money in a fait du monde. Yeah. Yeah. So the U.S. probably sees this very positively.
It's a little spooky.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they do not know what this box contains. As Cuba, someone that lives in the country,
Cuba, yeah.
Because, like, we live in a place that's just totally, once again, like, in this weird, like, late-stage capitalistic, like, gig economy simulacrum of, like, a reality.
Yeah.
And so that's, I don't want Cuba to devolve into that, because I think in a way that would be a de-evolution from...
No, and South Korea is experiencing their own issues and wealth disparity and their own, like, they got to late-stage capitalism very fast in South Korea.
Hence Parasite and all those.
Right.
Even before that, yeah.
Yeah, but you're not wrong. But a couple things. There was a level of prosperity. China experienced the same thing when they went through their growth. And now they're having an economic crisis. But there was a couple decades of prosperity that I think every country so desperately craves, even if it's for a little bit, even if it turns into like this kind of, you know, like superfluous hellscape. At least there is a chance, and I think there's a chance for the U.S. to do this too, to adjust and then change according to like this level of outsized growth that you've now obtained, and then do it in a way that's more productive. So I think we can do better. And
that's shitty though. That's like the bully making the nerd kid get hot before they talk to them.
but the nerd kid really wants to get hot.
And I want the nerd kid to get hot.
Yeah, exactly. So we want the nerd kid to get hot so we can all hang out.
She's all that.
Yeah.
North Korea, South Korea is cat dog. And U.S.-Cuba relations.
The U.S. is Freddie Prinze Jr.'s friend. Yeah. Or it's like their friends being like, I'll bet you can't get her to become prom queen when South Korea turns her into the prom queen.
Yeah, Cuba takes off its glasses and everyone's like, damn.
That's so funny.
Well, I guess, yeah. Love to see it.
I mean, I view it as positively because I think 'tis the will of the people at this point. 'Tis the will of the people. Let it be done. 'Tis
the will of the people.
Well, let them make that bed and lay in it if that's so their choice, because they've had a lot of this for a long time and, you know, they want to try something new. I think that's just, at that point, it's very common to express that even if you're living in Cuba.
Wanting to try something new is actually a great segue to our next Cuban item.
Mm.
Our Cuban item... Of the past.
A Cuban item of the past. That's a fun new segment name.
A Cuban item of the past. Shh. Are those waves washing something out to sea?
Sure.
Or perhaps the bottle is coming back with the message in it.
A bottle came back to shore today.
It certainly did.
In the form.
Of this film.
Yeah. You want to tell us about it?
It's called La Ciudad de las Carpas. Mm-hmm. It's made in 1980 mm-hmm. by Minuca Villavedor.
Villaverde. Mm-hmm. Minuca Villaverde.
Are you sure?
I'm sure, Julian. It's in my Google search history now.
And it will be forever.
I know.
So I had seen it, actually. This was on the list of films to check out. That was in that article that mentioned Fresa y Chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
And so
they're on a real kick.
We are on a real little
that,
Cuban.
And that same blog that had, it was the same blog that you said that had Fresa y Chocolate on it?
Yeah, it was in the same article.
Okay. Right.
It had references to other like queer Cuban films from the past.
Yep. I remember. I remember.
And this was one of them. What's great about it in this day and age, I don't have time for a feature length film. This was 30 minutes. And I thought it was a beautiful documentary, even though the version we saw on Vimeo was very lo-fi.
Mm-hmm.
But so a little bit about the actual documentary and not just Brian's and my experience watching it is is that there were refugees, mm-hmm. the Mariel refugees.
Right.
And they're called out. Why? They left
They left out of, you literally said, I'm going to research this before we record. It was because of the bay that they left from, I'm pretty sure. So it's like Mariela Bay. Mariela boat lift. Cuba who traveled from Cuba's Mariel Harbor to the United States.
Yeah, Mariela. Okay.
Between April and October of 1980.
Yes. And so a lot of them were relocated to different parts of the country. Mm-hmm. This particular group in the documentary was in essentially a tent city in Miami under a freeway.
Yes.
I had a weird physical reaction when I just giggled at that.
I didn't really think you giggled.
Because homelessness right now is like hella triggering for me just because it's rampant in our neighborhood.
Yeah.
But they weren't homeless. Like, they lived in tents, but they weren't necessarily homeless because at the end of the documentary, it mentions how they're now being relocated to somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Why the state just allowed them, if not encouraged them, to just be intense. That's the part I can't square.
Why the state allowed them to?
Yeah, or like, why were they even in this situation where they had to be intense?
Well,
is that a super privileged question? Like, if they're already on a track to be relocated, why is there that weird interim space where they're unhoused?
Well, because you kind of answered the question. If you immigrate and you are quote unquote safe the moment you step foot on America's soil. You know, that's the wet foot.
But we don't have like this state apparatus that like immediately sends you to a halfway house.
No, you're going to spend some time under an overpass.
Okay.
While we figure shit
well,
out.
I'd like to fix that.
Yeah, I think we all would. I think
I'm not saying open borders, but like shit, at least like, I don't know.
You want them to like kind of walk into a Days Inn situation?
Yes.
Or like a little sleeping pod?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's, once again, we're talking about a perfect world scenario. I would love to, anywhere I go, I just want to walk into a sleeping pod that's like cozy and they like send me in a tube to my next location. But yeah, once again, they don't have the apparatus now, definitely not in 1980 either yet.
Yeah, and it's a very favorable depiction of the tents. Mm. And a lot of these tents are occupied by gay couples, by trans women.
The life in the tents was favorable, but these were very hopeful people.
Yes, but the film, I guess is what I'm trying to say, has a way of romanticizing it too.
Interesting.
Don't you think?
Not the tents themselves, but
not
the people.
Not the tents themselves, but
the people and their optimism.
And their optimism.
For their situation that they found themselves in, even if they're like, okay, yeah, it sucks, we're in this tent city, like they're all like, you know, like one said, we've been lied to by the Cuban government about how bad America is, we also lied to ourselves thinking as soon as we walk in it's going to be a paradise. He's like, there's a lot of like grit and sacrifice to achieve a good life here, you know, is like what they said. But a lot of them were anti-communist, a lot of them were very disenfranchised, and in those groups
either gay or Christian. And apparently a lot of the Mariel refugees were gay.
Which
the idea of like a bunch of Cubans in the 80s landing in Miami, like hot gay Cubans, just like that's an international mail catalog.
I mean, think about what happened in Miami in the 80s. There was this massive injection of Cuban influence and style and culture and flair. And it's persisted ever since in the 80s. This happened 1980 on the dot.
Dare I say it, like, informed the movie The Birdcage. Like,
The Birdcage. Scarface. This informed Scarface.
Yes.
Yes. We watched Tony Montana under those tents.
What do you mean? Like, someone was watching Scarface under those tents?
No, I mean, he came over in that same era.
Oh, I see. But he wasn't literally in the tents in the movie, right?
He did start out very impoverished, yeah.
I've never fully seen
He starts out, I don't know if it's like a tent situation, but I remember it's like a very like...
He's like on the street.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Let's see.
Oh, that's why like all these rappers and stuff like him, it's like a rags to riches, like literally like from the street.
I'm looking up if Tony Montana was a Mariel. Yes. Yes. He's a Marielista.
Wow.
He's Marielisto, I guess, in his case.
It's kind of a shame that we haven't talked about this sooner.
Tony Montana specific, or like Scarface?
No,
or like...
the Mariel refugees.
Well, you know, we got a lot to cover, sis.
I know, but it just seems like such a huge... Like, we didn't even talk about it amongst our family, did we? Like, I don't know where...
Well, I think sometimes... Like, our family didn't think it as their responsibility to let us know, like, what were the current events or series of events that happened after they left. They're more concerned with what happened.
That's true. I'd be like, I'm seven.
Yeah, like, if I moved from the U.S. to, like, somewhere else, then, like, some crazy shit happens in the U.S. 30 years after I moved there, I'm not going to... And then my kids are born 20 years after that. I'm not going to be like, oh, yeah, you know, also this happened in my home country, you know, like... 10 years before you were born.
I don't mean to fault him for it. I guess it's more, I'm just surprised I'd never heard of it. And it lasted 3 years, you said?
The Mariela.
Or was it just a one-time occurrence?
No, it was over the course of about 6 months.
Oh, 6 months.
April to October of 1980.
I was like, damn, 3 years. That's, yeah, wow.
Mm-hmm.
And in the documentary, doesn't she say that the population in 1959 in Cuba was 10 million? Or
no,
now it's 10 million.
It was 6 to 8 million previously.
And now it's 10?
Right, yeah.
Which you said was like actually...
So a million had left when it had a population about 8 million. Now it's like 11 million. So
and I was like, hey, it's still growing, but you were like not enough.
No, considering how much more the world population has grown in that same time span, Cuba's birth rate's been extremely low. It's a global, you know, birth rates are dropping, but in certain regions, they just pop. They just continue to pop. Yeah.
But also Cuba has like a current diaspora going on too.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just like hemorrhaging.
And now that's why they are talking to South Korea.
Right. Great way to thread both of these together.
Opening a private sector and sending business leaders to the U.S. and American business leaders to Cuba.
This and is maybe one of- day people don't have to wait in tents once the wheels of diplomacy are fully greased, you know? But it was romantic, Brian. And like, I know it was fucked up of me to say, but like, that would be a great collection, like an idea for a runway show.
Julian was romanticizing a lot of the wardrobe in there, and I get it. It actually would be a massive hit.
It's like a skinny guy that identifies as a girl with like peroxide blonde hair and like an off the shoulder, like
looking vaguely like Cynthia from Rugrats. Yes. Like Angelica's doll.
Yes. With like baby blue flip flops. Like, it was just such a vibe.
It was Cynthia chic.
Yeah.
It was,
and but like a little more Spanish, like,
yeah.
And like, it was, I don't know.
It was very gender fluid.
These were
uber queer.
And I do think in an ideal world, though, people, there would be that sense of community that you saw in La Ciudad de las Carpas. Because, like, it seems in a way idyllic. And I'm not trying to glamorize poverty, even though I want to make all of their clothes into a high-end designer
collection. Concept of sorts, yeah.
But
that was...
I do, and like, and but I don't, I think the means to getting back to that would have to be like widespread destruction. Like, you know, you pretty much have to like abolish property and burn everything and stuff for it to just be like, you know, homies.
Wait.
Just like different little, I don't know, dude. Like different communities of like, it's like different tent communities.
So you have to do what? Why do you have to burn everything down?
Well, how else would people agree to this? And I guess that's like, in a way, kind of the communistic thing is like...
Agree to what specifically?
Like this kind of like... Like they would... I feel like they would just trade things at this camp. Uh-huh. Like they would cook for each other and fuck each other and make art together.
So once again,
like,
I think...
Like I'm talking about these like weird...
I think... So once again, you're like, how do we get to this level of joy and existence?
And like Julian, camaraderie. Camaraderie. Julian,
they're happy because they're leaving the tent city. They're happy because they know they're going to be bussed into a future. You know, they're happy because they get to sing.
And they made it out.
They get to sing the songs of Santeria that they did not in Cuba. They're having spiritual rituals that they did not have mere months ago when they first arrived. So they're happy because they're not going to be in the tents for long. So what you're seeing is like, I think you're kind of falsely conflating this like romantic of like the favela life with like, I think you want to live that life somehow, but you don't want to. You don't realize how much you actually don't
want to. I don't want to live it. I just crave simplicity.
But that's not how, you know, you want simplicity and comfort.
And I don't know simplicity. I couldn't do it if I tried. And that's what you're saying.
Right. Well,
I ever suggested this documentary. No. We're cutting this whole segment. Like,
no, you couldn't.
My classism is on full display.
You couldn't.
I hate this. Oh my god.
Well, it's also not simplicity. It's also just like you could be well off and like a simple life, but that's just like abject poverty. They literally just showed up with nothing. Like Tony Montana. That's why.
Yeah.
And it's funny, we talked about this, but when we were watching this, I was like, they are given a chance where if they play their cards right, and it's a tough system, not all of them will, but if they play their cards right, a lot of them probably ended up pretty well off.
I hope so.
Did pretty well for themselves.
I hope so.
Yeah.
It should be in the Criterion Collection. I think it's a really lovely, beautiful, pastoral. Like, it's like they lived under a freeway.
No, what was
you
romantic?
Know what I'm saying? It's the same reason I like Sean Baker movies.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah. it is like very street vibes, but it's like gorgeous and sweet and tender.
Yeah, like it's the people who make it beautiful. It's not their situations.
Yeah.
Even they resent their situations.
But also just like the aesthetic of it, the aesthetic world of it.
Yeah.
And maybe so, that's like fucked up to say.
No, I mean, I think it's good to like that stuff, but I think it's also maybe wondering, why do I like it so much? But maybe...
Well, it's the same as like, here I go.
Please.
It's like when I saw Bedouins in Jordan, dude, they were cool. Like, I just saw that and I was like, that is a look.
But it's the
cool
head wrap
vertical
look.
Weapons and things.
It's the head wrap look that you're talking about.
Well, and like the eyeliner. My whole point, and like, it's okay to like appreciate style if you notice it.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
So I guess I'm just trying to defend myself to no one in particular. Maybe to myself. Maybe I'm trying to defend myself to my damn self.
The defense rests, Your Honor.
Oh, man. We've done plenty on Cuba.
We have.
I was getting all restless. I was starting to do my Fred Flintstone thing where I run my feet really quickly along the floor, hoping that I'll move.
When were you restless? While we were watching the documentary?
No, no, no. Well, no, not as much as you, bitch. You were talking the whole time. I was like, Brian, I've already seen this.
But I mean, did I not absorb? Do you think I absorbed it properly?
You got the hits. You got the hits. But there were certain beautiful things that I was like, Brian, look at that frame. Like, this man is like wearing a blanket in a gorgeous way.
Yeah, I saw it. Like, I saw all of it. I saw okay. it. And once I appreciate and admire, I just think, okay, for someone who's more stylistically driven like you, this film means something different.
Well, and I don't think that's its only value. But what I really thought would be pertinent to us in LA is like the actual idea of tent cities and how we're confronted by them every day.
This looks exactly the same as like outside of our house.
Totally, right under the 101. And the city council election, I kind of want to talk about briefly.
Please, yeah. Take the baton.
Because that's been heating up, especially in District 4, my district.
Yeah. Is that my district too?
No.
Oh, damn. We're so close.
I know. There's like a weird cutoff.
Always is.
Yeah. I'm technically like... So Nithya Raman is a DSA
mm-hmm.
candidate that was elected back in... When was the last cycle? 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And this was very post George Floyd and Black Lives Matter. And so she was very much on like the defund the police tip.
Yeah.
And wanted to send out like social services essentially to deal with the homeless.
Mm-hmm.
But as someone that lives in that area, it has not gotten better at all. On Sunday, I was driving to my apartment and there was like a huge fire that had broken. Like, there are fires constantly. And it's just become such a huge danger.
Right.
Straight up. And so the guy running against her, who I was surprised to find was gay, because he definitely seems like, I mean, he may be a log cabin for all I know, but he's definitely right leaning.
There's definitely a growing confluence of
NIMBY gays. Yeah.
Right leaning gays for sure.
Yeah.
Log cabin gays.
Well, and again, just because we want to appropriate the homeless look doesn't mean that like we want to be surrounded by.
Doesn't mean I want them in my
it.
Neighborhood. Yes, like Juliet. I mean, you get a chance to appreciate that aesthetic all the time though now.
Yeah, but it's different because it's not Cuban. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like it's not.
So if,
like,
if the homeless were Cuban, you'd feel different about it?
No, if their clothes were from wherever those Cubans got. Like, just like the actual trajectory of the clothes these homeless people wear versus the ones in the documentary.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
It's really unfortunate what they did to.
I think we should. Oh, my God, Ryan. I need to stop. Hey, it is very Mugatu, very derelict.
Uh-huh.
Derelict. But.
So this new...
So Ethan Weaver is his name. He's running against Nithya. And my NIMBY ass is like kind of going for him. Because Nithya apparently is very incompetent. I don't know firsthand, obviously. But I know people that go to the meetings. She's late showing up. She apparently doesn't get back to a lot of the constituents on like all of my little neighborhood boards.
Well, that doesn't
because
sound
Because I'm like on like, you know, message boards now online and shit. Which is cool. But
I mean, yeah, for local politics, I'd love to know what... I should be on when it comes to LA politics.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It's like being involved in your community.
Then tell me your username so I could look at your posting history.
Okay. I don't post.
You're a lurker.
I'm right? a lurker. Yeah, I just same. Keep myself informed. I'm not going to... What am I going to post?
Yeah.
But another fire today. But I saw it too, Red. But the difference between what's going on in that documentary and what's going on in our town right now is that these Cubans were then moved somewhere.
They have a place to go.
Yeah. And they want to go somewhere.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a
no,
really
as far
tough...
as the people who live outside of your place, they've arrived.
Yes.
They're
I mean the, some these... of them.
Yeah.
And so then it becomes a tricky situation.
Yeah.
And like I don't trust the police, but like we need them.
But the moment that they did start slashing, not even slashing, they you know, some police departments saw decrease in budget by like a couple percentage points. And they just like threw a huge fucking fit and like let people die, right? They let people in danger because the department's budgets were slashed. I don't think that really reflected on like the average police officer's day-to-day paycheck for the most part. So, I mean, fuck them.
Yeah, it's just heating up. There's mad drama. That's why I wanted to bring it up.
I always come to you for the local news, and I'll cover the geopolitical. That'll be our dynamic.
Cool,
from that
cool. Yeah, and well, and also I don't like to get bogged down in local news because, like, I don't know how many of our people actually live in LA, but
I think what happens at a local level happens throughout the country in a lot of ways, because like the national narrative, it also drives these local laws and like local congregations.
Yeah.
So I think
yeah, they're trying to pass a bill to like add bike lanes or a wider pedestrian crosswalk every time they have to renovate a street, and that will create so much traffic. Mm-hmm. It just makes no sense. And like that won't override the system, you know what I mean? Like, they actually have to invest in like public transportation.
You know what I want to invest
in? And it has to come from the state.
That's my hot take, is that the state has to pay for
it. I feel like the state should pay for a lot of our shit. We're such a big part of the state.
I definitely think, like, per capita, as rich as California is, and they have really good social systems, California. You know, Medi-Cal is a really good health, is really good health insurance for people who can't afford, like, good health insurance for the most part, like, your average plans. But in terms of, like, it definitely feels like per person, when you look at the widespread poverty, it still feels like an underserved community. Maybe not all of California, but LA in particular, and certainly our neighborhood. And it's stressful to feel the effects of that and see it around you.
Yeah, because I've been in this neighborhood 10 years, mm-hmm. and it's just, there's a heaviness in the air right now.
That didn't
exist. That goes back to what we were talking about in the beginning, like how these high points just feel different. Like, it feels like the Dust Bowl up in this bitch, you know? The mothballs, honey.
The Hollywood Dust Bowl.
The Hollywood Dust Bowl. We're playing the Hollywood Dust Bowl, guys.
Hey, you know what, though? There is a world that I think you will enjoy going to.
Take me, just take me.
You know where this is?
I think I know.
It's the world according to Jules.
That's the kind of world I'm going to live in.
I know, you really want to let that one out. It's been a stressful episode for you, buddy.
It kind of has. Do you see me over here just like starting to pace around and
stuff? You are sweating like a Catholic priest at a Little League
No,
game.
It's not that I'm sweating or anything. It's just like, I guess I wanted more pop culture, and we haven't done much of that. These have all been such sad things.
I'm sorry. Don't worry. We're going to get to all that.
Okay, what do you got for me?
So I'm going to read Julian a headline. He's going to give me his pure, unfiltered thoughts. Are you ready?
I just slammed my kombucha.
You
I'm so did. Ready.
I can't. I'm imagining a few burps midway through this this rant. But here we go.
Be sure to pause the clock.
You ready for your first? I want to savor every second you have. Completely unfiltered thoughts. Your first headline. Are you ready?
Yes.
A man and his wife were working from home. He, quote unquote, listens in on her work Zoom calls, and based on the knowledge, insider trades his way into $1.8 million. He got caught for insider trading because that's illegal.
Because he was listening in on her, like, right. I see.
So buying stock based on company insider knowledge, etc., is illegal. Yeah. So now him and his wife are divorcing. And he is being charged by the government for financial crimes. Go.
White collar crimes are so over. Like, you know how I know? Because Adam McKay would direct a movie about this and it would kind of fizzle out in the box office. But I think if you could reverse the story somehow, this would make a wonderful romantic comedy.
She listens in on his.
No. He like starts by listening in on a person whose call he doesn't know, is vilified for it and everything. But then the girl whose call he was dropping in on like falls in love with him. And it would have to be a post-Me Too narrative, you know?
Right. That's why I think if you swap the genders in this situation, it makes for a little bit more narrative friendly in
yeah.
in the current ethos of the...
Yeah. Emma Stone could totally pull off like being like a hacker that... Or not a hacker, but like a
like a nosy wife who like opens up her Robinhood based on what she overhears her husband say.
Here we go. Once again, giving Hollywood like multi-million dollar ideas. Multi-million? Wow. That's a lot of millions.
Yeah, it's more than one.
More than one.
It's more millions than I've had, for sure. Yeah, I like that. That will make a good movie if we swap the husband-wife role, I think.
Yeah. And bonus points if it's not as white collar as inside trading. Like, that's some Martha Stewart shit.
It is, but what I like about this, if it's the wife who's listening in on the husband's calls, and then she gets arrested and she's having to, you know, face the consequences, and like she's getting divorced, finally we have a female lead who is flawed but also faces the consequences of the world. I think it's a great allegory for how women are only allowed to mess up once in society.
Boom.
Next story. So an Oklahoma judge who sent more than 500 texts during a murder trial resigns, including messages that mocked prosecutors and were sprinkled with emojis. Your thoughts?
The app is called Signal. The app, Your Honor, is called Signal. What a dumb fuck. I don't even think it like makes him any less legitimate as a judge or frankly human being to be talking shit about jurors. And you know I'm a proponent of like obviously talking shit. Like,
or texting during work.
Certainly texting during work, yeah. For sure. Yeah. Which man will watch the man? Who will watch the watchman?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And in this case, it was probably AT&T.
Yeah, I know. I'd love to figure out how they found that out. Okay, 500 is a lot, right? So I'm sure someone was like, did anyone notice that judge was looking down at his phone all the time? And the judge probably thinks they're above reproach. And then they're just probably audited their phone and then was like, wow. But as they were counting, they could not believe how many texts. They're like, okay, a couple texts inappropriate. Holy shit. And then it's like 500. It's like, LOL, this prosecutor sucks. Smiley face, you know?
Yeah, what? That's like such a, honestly, like such a red state story. I feel like in California, it's like, oh, I just use this encrypted apps.
You don't have to stress out about the time. I know you're stressed about it.
I'm sorry. And I know you're already dealing with a lot. So who am I to get all? I don't know what happened. Like a little switch happened for a second. And I was like, shit, I don't know what to say.
I think it was, I can cut all the, you know, poverty stuff. Don't worry.
Maybe that's what it was.
Yeah, that is. You're like, oh my God, I'm going to be canceled after this. That's literally.
Again, it's laughable to think you're cancelable. But.
I know. That's why I'm like, dude. And now you're like trying to get it over with or like get to certain things and like just engage. Just
live in the moment.
Live in the moment. I got this.
That's the mark of someone with anxiety is not living in the moment, by the way.
Well, Lord knows I get it.
Like, yeah.
I'm not successful all the time, of course, but yeah, I made it a big goal, and I do, and then I fall out, and then I get back into it, but just to try to live in the moment, be more present and not so
stressed. And with things that are more performative, too, it's such a fine line for me between feeling joyful about it and then feeling, like, insecure or, like, in doubt about doing it. And so that dance is a delicate one, and one I'm intrigued by.
Here's some advice. Only focus on the joyful part. When you are performing, you could.
I know that, Brian. Later. But it's easier said than done. That's all.
I know, but I just try to enjoy that I'm talking to my cousin. You know,
that's sweet, and I normally do too. So
normally,
well, yeah, because today it didn't happen as much.
Did I hurt you at all?
No, you didn't. Not at all. But the other shit that I have to talk about is so sad.
What is it?
Well, we wanted to talk about that guy self-immolating himself for Palestine, but I don't know. There's no food left, Scar. Well, no food, no water.
Was there any pop culture stuff you wanted to talk about?
Bitch, no. I did want to talk about this one artist who stopped taking his HIV medication because the theater... I shouldn't have laughed through that, but the theater, I'm just laughing because it's once again a sad fucking thing to talk about.
Yeah, we didn't realize how much of a downer episode we had in front of us.
We're like, sorry, everybody. About 5 minutes in, I was like, wait, I don't have anything about Troye Sivan this week. Like, you did say earlier, we should have been recording that Chris Hemsworth is quite the name. So that's
a really fun celebrity name to say.
Okay, great. See, that checked our pop culture box. Woof. I could breathe now.
Yeah.
I feel good. We could talk about this one sad fucking thing. Although, well, really quickly, going the two sad fucking things. So going back to Bushnell, boy, this one's a roller coaster. But Bushnell, you saw the video. You fucking glutton for punishment. You saw him burn, set himself on fire. Mm. This airman. Bushnell's his name. I commend you, dude. Yeah. I can't do it. But it was blurred, I figured out.
It was blurred, yeah.
I have issues around that, like moral issues. Mm. Like, there goes the whole point of that act.
Well,
if you're going to blur it.
Well, all we know is one version is blurred and it's been made public. People saw it live.
But what about Taylor's version?
Taylor's version?
You know how Taylor Swift is re-recording all her songs and releasing them as Taylor's version?
She's re-recording all of
because
her songs?
Because Scooter Braun, wow.
Oh, okay. Okay, but Jesus
I'm
Christ.
I'm so sorry I brought this.
Yeah.
There I go again doubting my shit. But I'm like, Julian, you can't go from Bushnell to Taylor Swift. I'm like, Satan is speaking through me today, Brian, and I don't like it. What is going on? I remember once doodling with my friend, and I couldn't help but make like these weird swastika patterns. And my friend was Jewish, and he was like, well, don't do that. And I was like, dude, I'm so sorry. Like, my fingers just like are doing it. And I feel like that's what my brain has been up to.
Oh my God.
That's why we pray, bitch.
So Taylor, like Taylor's version was like your verbal swastika that you just said.
Yeah, when we were talking about this airman who like set himself on fire for Gaza.
And so, yeah, he had created Taylor's version of his self-immolation and, you know, he died.
And then they did the Scooter Braun thing. They bought the catalog.
Yeah.
And didn't give him the rights. Isn't that actually a pretty clean fucking metaphor? Apt. Not clean, but like a neat not neat, but the metaphor tracks. Isn't that just a neato metaphor?
I know by neat you don't mean neato. You mean like neatly
like
packaged.
Yeah, it's well constructed and it tracks.
Julian, the world's a minefield, honey, and I commend you for attempting to walk through it.
Thank you.
Yeah. You're my cousin.
Because bitch,
you.
It was the red shoes up in there. I was tap dancing between mines.
Yeah. Did you escape unscathed? We'll find out after we publish the episode. But...
Well, so far I have, because I haven't seen that fucking video, but by blurring it, they totally...
So it's dark. It's very dark. And what do, you know, what do I make of the act? You know, it is one of the most powerful forms of protest you could possibly...
Yeah. Yeah.
And he tied. You know, he
makes
went
me
to the
feel
hospital.
Like a dude on the street corner being like, yo, he did it. You know, like just like outside with my homies, like, yo, dude, like, what's his first name?
I don't know.
But I'm like, yo, Jeff did it or whatever, you know.
They got out
it's
of the
like,
project.
I didn't think he'd fucking do it. Like, it's baller as shit. And I don't care what your politics are. Like, setting yourself on fire is insane.
There's a reason why that monk burning himself is so iconic.
But the other reason is because that wasn't a censored image. And that was my issue with
no,
this.
No, before it's all said and done, because he did it live. So I'm sure people recorded.
Aaron Bushnell.
So I'm sure people recorded, is
yeah.
what I'm saying.
And one of the cops said, oh, it's distress. You know, he's like under, it's mental distress, I think is how one of them described it.
Yeah,
and
mental
I was like,
distress over committing a genocide.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm
I
sure
was
that's
like,
a very
what a
stressful...
weird...
And so that's why it's so powerful, because you know if you have a front row seat to what's a sick show and you just can't abide by it, that you'd sooner literally kill yourself in the most painful way possible, and your dying breath is about what you believe in. Huh.
I know. And someone's like, he's clearly just confused and having a bad day. Clearly schizophrenic. I'm like, no, dude, this shit's upsetting.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I mean, who knows?
I'm sure he's mentally unwell. Who's to say that this didn't make him mentally unwell, of course?
Yeah. It's performance art. Yeah. That is actually a solid link between this and the next.
What is the next one?
So let me pull up this guy's name. But he is a theater director in New York City.
Yeah.
Who stopped taking his HIV medication to protest the New York Theater Workshop for their refusal to call for a ceasefire. Mm. And it's honorable, but also I'm like, that's your target? Is like this one super
this one theater
niche?
You're saying like aim a little higher if you're going to...
Go Lincoln Center, honey. Yeah. Go Carnegie Hall. You know, how did you get to Carnegie Hall? You know, I don't know. And I don't know specifically. His name is Victor Casares or Casares. Yeah, it took him about 41 days before his body, what do they call that? Like, goes back into...
So he's already... When did he stop taking it? How far along is he into this protest?
This article in New York Mag was written February 22nd, so...
A few days ago.
Yeah, so...
Was that when his protest started, or did it start before that?
He started on December 1st.
Oh, shit. So he's...
And he did videos of different pills. He burned one tablet on a miniature pyre inside a geode.
You know what sucks,
though?
Oh,
my God, I've been misgendering them.
Okay. You know what sucks, though?
We gotta scrub so much of this, dude.
Yeah, it's okay.
What are you thinking?
I mean, like I said, it's fine.
You want me to edit this shit for a change?
Sure, if you want to.
Okay, because I fucked this, man. So anyway, they are not taking their HIV medication. Oh, boy. But you know, a name like Victor, like... Oh.
Not your fault, Julian. You're trying, honey. I'm trying so hard.
I'm trying too hard today is the problem.
Yeah.
They gave their second pill a burial with a flower on top. Third receives, yeah.
I mean, don't you feel like they should at least give that pill to someone who needs it? Am I crazy?
Wow. I didn't even think about that.
That was like kind of where my mind first
went. Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
But again, that's their way of like making sure the video's set up as they burn themselves. Mm-hmm. There's the parallel there. Like the idea of like immolating yourself for a larger
reason. People need to know that you did it. Otherwise, it was for nothing.
Right.
If you slit your wrist for Gaza and you didn't leave a note or anything,
then how are they to know it was for Gaza?
You're just another statistic.
You're just another clinically distressed person.
Right. So if you're going to go out with what you believe in. But, you know, might as well stay around and fight the good fight any way that you can. Because once you're burnt to a crisp, you can't do anything, even if it is one of the craziest acts. And one of the more, where fucked up meets noble is exactly where that act exists.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you know that Star song that starts, "When you have nothing left to burn, you have to set yourself on fire"?
No.
It's really good.
Who sings that?
Stars.
Oh, that Star song. I thought like when you said that Star song, it was like a song called Stars.
No. But a song called Stars, a song that has stars in it, is called Stars Are Blind by Paris Hilton.
Yeah, I remember.
Which has a little bit of a Cuban feel, come to think of it.
I don't know. Maybe the stars are blind. It is a little, it's got like almost like a reggae. It's got a reggae beat.
I don't know. I think we did this, and maybe we won't edit it, because maybe it's just beautiful as it is.
I can't wait to listen to it unedited, and I know my mouth will collapse in horror at a few moments, and I'll debate to myself, is this worth keeping, or do I
start? I mean, let's be real, you're probably more, you're gonna cut out more than I would, so I trust you, and I trust this process.
This might be one that we should listen together and see what the deal is.
Yeah. You kept this boat afloat, so thank you.
Once again, thank you all. I don't mean once again me, I just mean once again to all.
Right, right. I thought you were saying you. I was like, fuck, he's once right. Once again, I did.
No. We've each taken turns keeping the boat afloat at points.
I've never revealed my crippling self-doubt the way I did today, but maybe people will find it relatable.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll I don't know, but then I lose a lot of star points. But what the fuck do I know? I know.
Oh, man.
Because, like, people like a star. And I am. But, like, you know.
You know what
even
people...
Even stars are blind.
What people love in all of their celebrities, stars, etc. What people love in all of them and what they really... crave is authenticity. And even if insecurity is your brand of authenticity, that's
damn,
there's nothing wrong with that.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. From the Guantanamo Bay's podcast, I'm Brian Bogart.
And I'm Julian Cosa.
I love you, cuz.
I'm just kidding. I just thought it'd be funny if, like, at the end, I'm just in sobs.
Yeah, don't worry.
It's also funny because I'm like, my mom's going to hate this one.
Were you afraid that
that's
people would have actually... Were you afraid people would have thought you were actually crying?
No, but then you said, I'm sorry, cuz. And I was like, oh, people are going to think I'm crying.
I said, I love you, cuz.
Even worse.
You only say that to someone
who's crying. Yeah, true. At least straight guys only say it to people that are crying.
Not this
That's
one.
That's how girls get it out of you.
Jesus.
Not you, like the general straight you.
You are on a roll tonight.
No. Take this microphone out of my hand.
From the What's On Base podcast, I'm Brian Bogart. That's Julian Goza. Thank you, and
good night.
Hasta luego.